Welcome to Art & Company, a podcast out of Miami, Florida, presenting spontaneous conversation on art and creativity. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Alette Simmons-Jimenez, and I'll be introducing you to local and not-so-local artists, curators, designers, poets, and more from our creative industries. I hope you agree that they make great company. When we're done, we'd love to hear from you, so let us know what you think. Today, we're listening to episode 2, The View from Chabon. This is going to be something a little special. I know I've stated that most episodes would be recorded in my studio, but I had an opportunity I couldn't pass up. I suddenly found myself in the Dominican Republic, in the city of La Romana. That's home to the fantastic Alto de Chabon School of Design. I'm so proud I can say I had a presence here and exhibited way back when. I'm on my way up to the top of this beautiful cliff overlooking the Chabon River. That's the spot where we find the La Romana campus and where we'll meet up with this episode's guests. It's amazing here. There's the school, the residency program, dormitories, the village, galleries, exhibition spaces, the shops, a market, a small hotel, a church, the Regional Museum of Archaeology, and great restaurants, cafes, and an amphitheater. There's actually a huge concert here tomorrow night. The design of the whole place was inspired by 16th century Mediterranean villages. And oh yeah, did I mention the landscape? Oh my God, it's gorgeous here. I just want to say that it's so nice to be here. This is such a great way to connect again with good friends and to make some new ones. Everyone around the table is part of the School of Design at Alto de Chabon, and I just know that what we're going to discuss today, that artists could really benefit from. The school is very acclaimed, and I think that in some places it's not that well known, so let's get to know it a little bit better. Let me introduce you to my guest today. I have Stephen Kaplan, rector of the school. We've been friends forever, like I said, and I've always admired how much he does, and I want to hear from the very beginning in a little bit. I also have Raul Millard. He's chairman of the Fine Arts Department, and they offer an amazing curriculum that we're going to hear about also. And I have Gustavo Fermin. He's a resident artist. He's a graduate of the school, and he's a professor here. And I think that this is going to be called The View from Chabon.
Wow.
Is that good?
That sounds good.
That's good. Okay, Stephen, so can you start like from the beginning? I know you don't want to, but give us a little details about the beginning.
The beginning is a long time ago. Huh? But basically, Gulf and Western, a gigantic conglomerate, had a sugar plantation in the Dominican Republic, and a sugar operation as one of their industries. And as a result of it, they decided that they would start to develop some kind of tourist program and possibly a real estate division and other divisions. And one of the things they needed was a focal point. And the idea was Gulf and Western at that time owned Paramount Pictures. So they had a sort of grand idea of putting an artist village on top of this meseta, which is between the Caribbean Sea and the Chabon River, a spectacular spot. And they brought in an architect, a Dominican architect, Tony Caro, and this is, we're now talking maybe 40 years ago, and they brought in Roberto Coppa, who was a set designer and stylist who had worked with Visconti and Fellini on films. He worked with Zeffirelli on opera sets. And so he had this great theatrical idea of doing some kind of a fantasy 16th, 15th century colonial village dedicated to art. That was the very beginning, and I was called in probably 38 years ago to start to develop programming for the place. So there is a museum now, which was always considered to be here from the very beginning. There's an artist in residence program with studios and residence for artists, a little bit like McDowell and other artist colonies. There's the School of Design, which is a two-year school affiliated with Parsons School of Design in New York since its first class in 1983. So Parsons has been the people that helped us develop our first curriculum and has made the education here one that is easy to translate into continuing studies in other places. We're a two-year school equivalent to an associate degree, and so our graduates then can go on and get a bachelor's degree in a number of other institutions worldwide. The foundation, now it's an independent foundation, about 25 years ago, Gulf and Western sold the properties, but the new owners continue to support our educational and cultural activities. And that means that the school has been able to continue, the museum continues. There's a gallery of contemporary art, and there is a, what am I missing? The foundation. There's a campus of the school in Santo Domingo.
That's so new. When did you?
It was inaugurated last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Before that, it was just continuing education, which were short courses, everything from making Christmas ornaments to work with kids. But now we have two of our majors there. We have graphic design and fashion design. And we've graduated about 2,000 students. And as designers, they've changed the whole look of the Dominican Republic. And as artists, they continue to win accolade all over. I mean, Raul could probably begin to spin some of the accomplishments of our students, but it's just amazing. Anything in particular or recent that has come up?
Well, right now in October, we have probably the most prestigious biennial here in the country. It's the León Jiménez. It's a museum in Santiago, the second largest city in the country. And more than half of the participants are graduates. And that's usually the case with most of the biennials. If you go to the most important art galleries in Santo Domingo, you'll see our graduates exhibiting there, which is the case right now. If you were to go, there are several exhibitions where our graduates are being displayed, and not only are they dominating the exhibitions, but they are usually the prize winners, the award winners, and so we're very proud of
that's fantastic.
Their accomplishments.
Yeah.
And many of them actually live off of their art. They're professional working artists, and that's what they dedicate their lives to.
And they're staying. Do you find that most of the students stay in the DR, or are
not
they
necessarily
leaving?
We have, I would say it's a mix. Several, Gustavo can talk about that. Some will go to New York and continue their studies at Parsons. Some will go to other institutions. Some will simply begin their professional work right after receiving their associate's degree here. Some will stay here. Some will go to Europe. Some will go to South America. I know we have several students in Argentina right now. We have, you know, numerous students
right.
in Europe.
But so you can't travel anywhere in the yeah. world that you don't run into a Chavon graduate.
Yeah.
And the Chavon graduates call themselves Chavoneros, as if it was a different nationality. Gustavo can give you a kind of window on what his experience was, how Chavon entered his life, and then how maybe it affected his life.
Before, I would
right.
like to add one
right.
thing with regard to that for the majority of our students study here on some form of scholarship, whether it's full or partial. Many of our students come from very underprivileged backgrounds, and with the education they receive here, it opens doors that they would never have thought of. And so we have students who have moved to Europe or exhibited in Europe or the United States that never would have had that experience had they not studied here. And so there is this desire for a lot of our students to see the world because they've simply lived in a very contained an underprivileged experience.
I'm going to jump in again because one of the things I think of about the school that's extremely important to me is that it's the only, it's a residential school. The students live on campus for the most part. And it's the only place in the Dominican Republic, and I would venture to say in most of Latin America, where the children of people of great affluence and talent are studying with the children of people with no affluence and talent, and they have talent, and talent is the common denominator. And this doesn't happen regularly in Latin America. And so people wind up with friends and access to the world. This becomes a window on the world. Some people have called it a trampoline that really allows people to have an experience that they never would have had. And we're extremely proud of the school, not only as an art school, but as a social experiment that has worked for Latin America.
To open doors, yeah. Yeah, and that's so important. It really is, you know, when you choose where to go. You know, I think it really, smart kids, you know, when I chose, I didn't really think about that when I went to school. But today, kids are much more prepared for that. Where can this lead to after? And that's such an important thing. It is.
Yes. And it's such a tight-knit community. You know, the first day of class, to my surprise, my experience, everybody knew my name, in the teachers and the administration, which was very strange because you immediately felt going into like a very personal atmosphere and community. And the friendships that, because it's such a tight-knit community, it, like in the tradition of Black Mountain College, for example, it feels like that. The teachers, most of the teachers live here in the efficiency, the students are in the students' residency, the scale is sort of small, where a type of like intimate and personal contact can happen.
Right, like you were saying, that when they do leave, it carries on. It you maintain those friendships because
yes.
It's small. You become they're lasting relationships that you run around
and
you're in Europe somewhere and you bump
and
into.
In the design world, you've got in this country, you've got students who study here whose parents have a certain amount of financial leverage in industry and commerce. And they recommend to their relatives, young people who were their classmates, who never would have had that entree, who never would have been able to get into those debt. You know, you're doing this new magazine. Why don't you have my roommate come and do some illustrations? He was terrific. And that kind of challenging the tendency for it to be a closed system has been very strategic in helping us help our students do well. And I think the fact that we still have the mix of maybe 30 or 40% of students who are on full scholarship, right now 46% of our entering class went to public schools in the Dominican Republic, and the other percentage probably went to the fanciest and most expensive bilingual secondary schools in the country. And they're working together.
Yeah, and it's actually probably, you know, super beneficial for those affluent students,
mm-hmm.
for the outlook they gain, you know.
We
you
hope
know.
So.
Yeah. one hopes that works, but I think it would. I do think it would. As artists, they're very open and receptive, so I think
yes.
it really would enrich their viewpoint.
And the first thing that we do in the morning, well, the students do, it's the critique of the assignments. So
right.
In this case, the critique acts like a type of regulator. There, that moment in the class, you know, it doesn't matter how much your social economic
right.
background.
Yeah.
We're talking about work and only work. And
yeah, everybody comes to the table with the same
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yes, which is
yeah.
great.
What you have up there is what is the measure. That's cool. And can you, first I wanted to let everybody know about what the school offers, the curriculum, because when I was looking at the website, because it has, from the time that I participated here or even after when I would just come up to see the shows and things, it's grown so much. It really, you know, I looked at some of the course offerings and I was like astounded. So just kind of give us an overview of all the, I think there's film also right now.
Well,
there's film and...
Well,
yeah.
Film is in the offing. It's supposed to start in February.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have a wonderful program planned with the former director of the film school in Havana.
Nice.
And so she'll be directing the program, and she's put together a group of... The essence of education is the quality of the instructors, of the professors, and the rapport they have with the students.
Yeah,
so we'll be offering an introductory program in film, and it's gotten a lot of response. I think we're planning on opening with 25 students, and I think there are already almost 100 applicants.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be able to choose the best. We have our regular fine arts program, which now fills the whole space in Chavon except for film. And those students study fine arts and illustration. They do a foundation year and a second year that Raul is in charge of both the foundation and the second year. Students study graphic design and communication design in the capital. And they have a foundation year in the capital that prepares them specifically for their second year. And then we have fashion or clothing design in the capital as well, and it has its own foundation year, which is linked to the second year for those students, and innumerable continuing ed courses, and plans for a very special kind of residency program, which we're calling EPIC, for students or artists who want a kind of sanctuary experience with visiting lecturers, and I don't know. You want to expand on that a little, Rose?
It's a 1 year certificate program, and the way that it's designed right now, we're also hoping that this will be launched in February of next year. And it's like a concentrated extended residency program mixed with a concentrated abbreviated master's program, where the goal is that each participant who is in the program develops a body of work throughout the year, and within that time they have access to all sorts of visiting professional artists who will do workshops, lectures. In addition, they'll have their own studio spaces here.
You accept students from everywhere.
We have students from about 22 or 25 countries. We accept, the language of instruction is Spanish in our basic program. However, we've never found that to really be a major handicap for any of the students. They generally pick it up really quickly a lot as time goes on. So
you get the added benefit of learning Spanish while you're there too, which is great. Yeah.
Right, and learning how to dance merengue and bachata.
Which is a really nice thing, too. Very
good.
Cultural.
Because it's a social.
Right.
I mean, the Dominican Republic has so much to offer in terms of human warmth and tradition.
Right. People
that
are
for
amazing.
A foreigner, it's a gift.
Right, it is. That's one of the wonderful things about the Dominican Republic, are the friendliness and warmth of the people. So,
that's why I'm here, really.
That struck me. I mean, I haven't been here in, I think it's like 2 or 3 years, actually, which is a long time because I have a lot of ties here. But immediately what struck me was that, well, besides the landscape, because I'm just like this crazy person for sunsets and landscapes and vegetation, and it's just so lush here. But the people, you know, the warmth of the people.
Did you see the full moon last night?
I did.
Spectacular.
Yeah. It was a full moon with a sunset. It was amazing.
It's like being in a planetarium.
Right.
And another
world.
And the moon shadows of all the palm fronds and everything was just magical.
It was magical.
11 o'clock at night. Landscape. Mm. It was great. Great.
It was beautiful. So there won't be any lack of inspiration for people, even if you don't paint landscape or anything like it. It just is inspiring. All that talent they have learning the way, which is through drawing and seeing. Actually, it's seeing.
That's really what it's all based on. It's observation, and you know what I tell my students, they're learning how to see.
Right.
And so the practice is really expanding their perception. And we have these technical exercises, but what really transforms is their perception of the world.
And I see that all the time when I go to galleries in New York and Chelsea. The things that I respect the most reflect an enormous amount of effort on the part of the artist, not only cerebral, but also physical and in terms of skills. And I think that combination of the thinking, the intellectual, together with the abilities is for me what gives art its validity these days.
The training here gives you the tools that you need later to be able to move forward in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Because they act like as a very important points of reference, technical. For example, even if you're a first year student, you're doing a drawing, trying to perfect that drawing. But later, even if you do your own work that involves, let's say, not the figure or whatever enterprise where your interests lead you, it's just a way that you would learn to go over that hoop and go over, you know, and make another decision and take everything into consideration. If you need a technology, you look for it. If you don't have it at that moment, you find somebody that does have it. Maybe you can learn how to do it.
I think that more so than drawing or painting, they're learning problem solving. And when they really understand that, then their focus is always the solution, not the obstacle. And I think that's what identifies most of our graduates, that they have this sense of, and I always tell them this, that it's what draws me here and keeps me here, is that they have this sense of, yes, I can. I don't know how, but I know I will. And so they in this constant daily practice of technical drawing or painting or whatever, they're really learning another skill, which is going beyond an obstacle and finding a solution for whatever confronts them.
Yes, and an important aspect that I can speak of from my experience studying here is that not only because you're very much involved in your own process, but since everybody lives here, you're living so close with everybody else, your peers, you get a real insight, not just a superficial one, into their own process. So let's say I would meet, which I did, for example, something that would take me an hour to do, for example. I had friends where they would do it in 15 minutes, for example. And it took me an hour. They could just do it effortlessly in 15 minutes. And I would always think to myself, like, what an honor, you know, to be in a place where I can see that it's possible to do it in 15 minutes, to see somebody do it with, you know, effortlessly.
Yeah.
So, and to be able to see it being done, not just verbally, but actually and physically and materially.
Yeah, and you learn from observing someone else do the same thing.
Of course.
Big time.
And,
we lose that. Once you get out of any your learning or university environment, that's hard to find again unless you do, which a lot of people do, and I love doing, is collaborating on projects with other artists, because of course 2-3 heads are better than one.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do things differently, and you end up learning again.
On campus is a wonderful ceramic facility which can be used by our students. It's a production center, but the students use the clay and they go in and learn from artisans. We have a silkscreen studio, which you mentioned you had a print made
years ago,
and they still use the printmaking studio to do both graphic work for the communication design and artistic pieces of work. And there's even a weaving studio which uses local cotton that ordinarily would be only used for mops, is woven into all kinds of utilitarian objects, but students have been able to use them too. So they understand the role of fine art and how it relates to industry and commerce, and how to work with an artisan or with someone who can manufacture something that you need for one of your projects. Because the truth is that many artists have an idea, but they need something welded, and they don't know how to weld it.
Right.
Or they need something done in ceramics. So here in the Dominican Republic, there's still enough craftspeople around that you can use them to stitch up a garment that you've designed for a performance, or to do some of the, you can get an electrician to come in and wire something for you. It gives you much more opportunity than you might have elsewhere. Your experience?
Yes, that is correct. And they're accessible, you see.
Nice, yeah.
Lots of small businesses, independent workers, and the facilities here, for example, the printmaking facilities, the silkscreen shop, they're great. You know, they've been doing that so many years. They're super receptive to the students, to their questions. And they feel very much part of this. They are very much part of this community, not just, you know, manufacturers or...
Right. I remember my experience at the beginning of the workshop. I came in and I think I was working on a commission from someone, and which I don't remember, but I came in and it was so nice to be able to have someone show me how it's done, watch them while they worked on my piece, be totally hands-on to a process I had no idea how, I had never done a silk screen before. And I learned the whole process and watched and you know, got my hands dirty and everything, which doesn't, usually you can't just go in and say, I have this silk screen in a print shop anywhere else and just say, I want to be part of the process. They're like,
So I hope the people listening to the podcast will consider coming here, taking the EPIC EPIC program, and they can do multiples of things they design at a reasonable price in our silkscreen studio and be exposed to other artists. Davidoff, by the way, the cigar people, have been underwriting for the last 2 years the visit of 5 international artists, and we've already chosen the 5 for this year. They'll be coming at the beginning of January. And there's an artist from China, and an artist from France, and an artist from Italy, and an artist from Iran, and I think an American, from somebody from the States. And in previous years, it's been the same mélange of different countries. And they do their own work in their studios. They live in the residence where the teachers live, and they have direct relationship with the students, kind of open studios for the students. Raoul arranges for them to speak to the students, show their work.
Do workshops with them.
That's amazing. That's like,
what an
enrichment,
right?
Yeah.
For example, this past year, or this year actually, the beginning of this year, one of the artists in residence is, he's actually French, but he lives in Germany, or was living in Berlin.
And born in Martinique.
yes. But born in Martinique, raised in France, and was living in Berlin. And he was teaching at the Art University in Berlin, and he brought 10 of his performance students here to work with 10 of our students. And that was an amazing experience for our students, but what they also did is that they did a fundraiser to raise money for our 10 students to go to Berlin. And so, was amazing to have, you know, after hearing the history of our students, to have these individuals who, some had never been out of the country, and they were able to go to Berlin this past July and do a performance.
That's amazing, yeah.
And Davidoff arranged, I mean, the people at Davidoff arranged all the visa information and all the difficulties, because it's a bureaucratic nightmare for a Dominican student who is not of a certain socioeconomic class to get a visa to go anywhere. And they arranged the whole thing so that 10 of these students had the experience of being 10, 15 days in Berlin, not only doing their performance with Jimmy Robert, but also having the experience of being in a great European city that's as dedicated to contemporary art as Berlin is. And it was just astounding. But it reminded me that years ago, and I don't even know if Raoul remembers it, we had an artist in residence who was named Hernan Garza, who was from Monterrey in Mexico. And it turned out he was from one of the oligarchic families of Mexico. And we didn't know that yet when he was an artist in residence. And after being here and meeting the students and giving a few workshops, were you here when Hernan was here?
Mm-hmm.
He took his entire class to Mexico, rented a bus, drove them around for 2 weeks around Mexico in a bus, visiting all of Mexico.
All expenses paid.
All
expenses.
Oh my God.
That's something that I remember from all the time that I lived here, in not in La Romana, but in the country, in Santo Domingo. The most amazing opportunities would just fall from the sky. That if living in the United States would never, ever happen. And you would, you know, people, it's small. You're connected by either, you know, friendship, partnership from school, or even just your community. People are very open. And things happen. Amazing things happen. It's
well,
funny.
You know, this is, we live under a little bit of a bubble here.
Yeah.
you know, this is the Dominican Republic, and it isn't the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
It sort of belongs to the world.
Yeah.
And so you're living within Casa de Campo, which is a resort and which is a real estate complex with probably 2,000 spectacular villas. And then somehow nestled in the middle of all of these people who are movers and shakers around the world is an art and design school, of which a percentage of the students, you know, are living in the dormitories, and it's probably the first time they've had hot water in their houses. And it, and then their artwork is then appreciated by these people from the outside world who know about art and buy their artwork and interact with the students and help them. And so that's where a lot of these amazing stories come, because you bring people together that ordinarily would not be tossed together in the great sea of fate.
I wonder if they, when they really first thought of this, doing this up here in this nestled little village up on the cliffs, did they really realize what they were doing? I mean, did they have the foresight? I think it was just a whim.
Wasn't they? It was me. And they believed enough in me to spend the money to make it happen in the beginning. I mean, you know, it was, to build the village wasn't my idea.
Right.
But to program it, I was involved with it from the very beginning.
Oh,
so
really?
I came here and there were many buildings which hadn't been designated yet. And the way that I got to be able to work for Altos de Chabon, I had worked for the Department of Education in New York, first as an art teacher, then as a counselor for new arrivals from foreign countries, from Latin America, to help them. You no longer say acculturate because it's not politically correct, but to learn how to deal with a new culture, which was theirs. And then I went on to take a master's at Parsons in administration and supervision of art institutions. And because I had been to the Dominican Republic with my wife several times, I wrote about the Dominican Republic in my thesis, which then got to Gulf and Western, and they invited me to be a consultant on programming what would happen here. And so some of these ideas were mine, and some of them came from the realization that I had dealt in Brooklyn with young people who had come as children of immigrants to the United States and brought with them the confusion and the intelligence and the desire to learn that I thought, if I came here, maybe I could bring something to that. So I always envisioned the place as something of a social experiment. For me, I wanted it to be an artistic experiment and a design experiment, but I also wanted to make sure that we preserved it as a service to the common man. And Dominique Blouron, who's the president of our foundation, her father told me that he was choosing me for this role because I was sensitive to the needs of the average person in the Dominican Republic and was not going to have something that was elitist here, even though the environment might be elitist.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
And
so there
so
was
we
quite a bit of foresight.
So there was a lot
inside,
of thinking.
Right?
And it's a battle, because it's hard sometimes to make such divergent populations work together. So it still
but
is
they
a battle.
Work. It's a battle, but they work. They've been, well, we just said, what, 40 years? Well, I remember when they were constructing it up here, and everybody thought it was nuts. But I met Roberto Coppa when he was here. I actually did it.
Well, it had a little of that, I don't know, the Fitzcarraldo. It had a little bit of that opera house in Manaus feeling at the beginning, because they were building all these colonial buildings or ersatz colonial buildings, but which makes it a different place.
Mm-hmm. And it fits right in so nicely with the environment that it, where it is placed. It was, yeah, well, I'm glad we finally got that out of you.
Sure.
I've been wanting to know for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so in a way, it's been the work of my life. I mean, I did work at other things, educational and artistic, before I came here. But my real commitment has always been to make the school mean something for the country as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of, it's like a reflection of you in a way, because I remember when I met you, when so long ago, I asked you, I don't know if you remember this, to write the intro to a catalog of a show that I was having. And yeah, you don't remember, but I still have it, of course, in all my documents. But you know, I was an artist in Santo Domingo, in the capital. But I was having a show here. You wrote
the presentation
in the catalog, and you were so generous because I was this young, not a kid, but I was pretty young, and you did such a generous and really sincere introduction or presentation in the catalog. It was wonderful, and that's
nice.
Like not everybody will do that. Really, it was like a gift for me.
Because I know that people need backup material. Probably 20% of your time is spent, or more, writing them as well.
Right.
Raul is a curator. He curates shows in the capital. He's attached to a very wonderful gallery in the Zona Colonial called Casa Quien. And he's curated some amazing, groundbreaking shows there.
It's owned by one of our former students.
Oh, really?
And showcases a lot
nice.
Of our students' work. Art and design.
Yeah. And it's a no better time than now, because I think it's very interesting how all these fields are. It's like an open source for any artist, whether you're just doing fine art or you're mixing with design or so it really, this is a great place to be because there's all the fields, across all the fields you can draw from.
Wouldn't we say that here? I was just telling somebody. 2 years with us in fine arts, and then in the capital is fashion or graphic design. You could do that as a third year, and many do it. And they bring with them that wealth of understanding of form and color and historical context that they've gotten here. And then they bring that to the service of communication design, animation, fashion design, clothing design, and hopefully bring a social conscience to it as well. So that there we talk about designing clothing for handicapped or geriatric. I mean, it's not all push-up bras and ball gowns, you know.
Not all
there's
Victoria's Secrets.
Right, it's not all sequins. It's it's other things too in designing clothing. But the graduate that we've had in all my time, I think, that I've been most jealous of is Gustavo Fermin.
Yeah, I want to get to him because he's been a little quiet over there.
But he is quiet.
Yeah, well, that's good. And it's,
but
you
that's
know,
good.
A man of few words. But anyway, you said something about a story about his residency and where he went with it. And I want to hear about it.
Oh, specifically how I started.
Yeah,
give us your like bio, long version.
Well, I studied first graphic design in another university in the capital, but I always knew I wanted to come here to study fine arts, and that dream became true. I was recipient of one of the scholarships, and I was able to come here. And after studying fine arts, I also was able to continue studying thanks to another scholarship in Parsons, New York. And continue my work there. And right after school, let's say like 6 months, I was hired to work with Peter Beard. I was hired by his wife and representative agent, Najma Beard, in New York to go to France, to relocate to France to do projects in the south of France specifically.
Oh, nice. Dream job, right?
Mm-hmm. So yes, at that point, I really wanted to travel, and
mm-hmm.
that job gave me the opportunity to do quite a lot of traveling, doing different projects. So I got to spend lots of time in Kenya, Nairobi.
Oh,
Kenya.
Nice.
Like
so, but
stays.
You were in photography Or was that your major field?
No, not at all. Fine arts. And
okay.
It related perfectly with the work that was needed, because I needed somebody who had knowledge of materials and building, somebody that knew how to construct things with their hands, and also have the digital.
Okay.
And I had both.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
And also I was from the Dominican Republic, and they really liked the fact that I was from here, because they knew that I was, since he was based in mostly in France, but spent long periods in Kenya, and there was a lot of traveling involved, they sort of clicked. So I was hired on the spot.
Right, right. You could relate to the...
Yes,
to the,
yes. And it was like a lot of traveling, you know, Dubai,
right.
London, Denmark, Italy, Switzerland,
right.
France.
And you had a studio in France for a while, right? You worked in France.
Correct, correct.
You had your own art studio.
My
right?
own studio, yes.
Yeah.
When I developed my work in Paris, yes.
Wow. And so how long were you abroad, let's say?
I would say 10 years.
10 years?
10 or 11 years.
Wow. That would be like another whole education.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yes. Because I have friends.
Postdoctorate. But, and so then you, how'd you come back here?
Well, last year, my father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back for, you know, for what I needed to do, you know, a lot of pragmatic stuff.
Right.
But then when I was back, it felt very good to be back. And I suddenly saw how I could continue my work here, from here. And I have like many friendships all over the world. And so I could come back here and keep producing
and still,
my work.
Right, and still stay connected to everyone.
Correct, okay. Yes.
Oh, and so you're the resident artist, is that correct?
Yes, he's an artist in residence.
Artist in residence. So, and that's something we really haven't talked about. So before we, I know it's gotten pretty long, but before we end, I wanted to, because there's that other, this other part, that there's a residency program, artist
right.
in residence
right.
program here, and that's for artists that are working artists.
Right.
Internationally.
Right.
Right? And so there's a whole process of submission like all residencies
right.
have. But how many do you, is it like a 3-month residency?
Well,
like
it's 3 months. We've turned over one segment to Davidoff. So that's when they send us 5 artists that they sponsor.
Right.
So people can apply to Davidoff. You have to apply through a curator to Davidoff. And they then have select some artists. And those artists are submitted to a panel. And then 5 are chosen for here. But in the other time of the year, the apartments that we use for our artists in residence are available for other artists in residence that we select.
Mm-hmm.
And we have of late looked to the legacy we have of graduates who need the tranquility and the kind of emotional coming home to come back here and do some of their work. And so when we've heard that Gustavo was back in the Dominican Republic, it was a natural to think he might want to come out and live with us as an artist in residence and teach for us. And the artists in residence stay usually for 3 months, and more or less a semester, 3 to 4 months, and they may teach a course or not, and that for which they're remunerated. And they pay something, which I'm not sure I remember how much it is, for their apartment, and they have a studio space designated for them. Portraying it right,
yeah. And also, just to add, included in that program is the business or marketing aspect of the art market. And part of what we would like to do is introduce these artists to galleries, gallery owners, curators, museums, that they begin making contacts during the time that they're here. And create these professional contacts that will eventually lead to other opportunities.
You would be creating culture, you see.
Oh,
they could,
for sure.
They could go on and create, which there are none at the moment, like artists run spaces.
Right.
And artists run studios, shared spaces.
Right.
There's none.
Right.
No, none?
Yeah.
Like what? No,
yeah.
In the country. Just
right.
to give your listeners some context.
Right, right.
So that even a small what would be seen like a small contribution could really go a long way afterwards.
Right.
When they step out.
Right.
Like a real impact on...
On here.
On here, yes.
Which is, you impact, it's amazing because it's, you know, it's funny, every time, well, the few conversations for this podcast, but we always come around to this thing that it's circular. But a lot of people that I talk to are doing, maybe it's a thing that attracts me to the person from the beginning and I want to talk more with them. But it's like what I think the most amazing initiatives are those that they benefit everyone. And they're very broad. And you may teach, but you're also being taught.
Right.
And the country is, you're giving to them. You're
it's
teaching.
Reciprocal.
Yeah, it's reciprocal. It's
right.
That's the
right.
Most amazing thing.
And the better, the more artistically aware the country becomes, the better we do here. So it is. So it does feed into
right.
Each other.
It feeds.
But I want to thank you for bringing us together because
yeah.
We haven't.
I love it.
We haven't had a conversation together in a long time. It's
mm-hmm.
a pleasure.
Yeah,
yeah it's
so,
been really, really good. I'm excited to get it out there to
good.
Everybody.
So, and if people have any questions, of course, we have a website.
Right, and we will be developing a website where they can go and you know, zero in on any details.
Good.
Contact to you, the school,
perfect.
The residency program, any questions, things like
perfect.
That. The
yes,
that
so
about well. Thing, that would be
great.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Enjoy it.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. I hope you agree our guests make great company. Art & Company is recorded in the studio of artist Alette Simmons Jimenez, that's me, located just outside of downtown Miami, where I record, edit, and produce all the episodes. Images, links, and more details on our guests from this episode and all our others can be found on our webpage, artandcompanypodcast.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so be sure to rate us and subscribe to make tuning in to our next episode easy.